Call that number, okay? I'm going to get off the phone with you.
You're listening to...
Here's how it starts. So call in and I'll get you in a second. Thank you. Okay. All right.
The All Nationalist Network. It's Wednesday night, and you're listening to What Is Truth with Jim and Joe Rizzoli. This is quite possibly the coolest hour of truth you'll get this week. So kick back and be amazed. Take it away, guys.
Well, hello, everyone. I'm Jim Rizzoli with my brother Joe.
Hey.
And this is our weekly show that we're doing, What Is Truth, it's called. And we had some technical problems getting on, but we made it. So we're going to have a half-hour show tonight, approximately, instead of an hour show. And this is the way it is when you're doing these type of things. But... Anyway, we've been gone for the last month. We've had some issues in the town we've been dealing with. But I said, well, when June comes along, we'll start up the show again, and we'll go from there. So that's a good thing. Well, tonight we actually have a special guest with us, and it's Diane King, and she's from Texas. And Diane, are you there?
I am.
Okay, so you can hear us, right?
And you can hear me.
Yeah, we can hear you fine. I might turn up the volume a little bit more here. All right, so okay. There you go. I can hear you better. It's a little louder now. How's it on your end? Okay, good. Well, anyway, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your quest for national socialism. And you know what you've been learning about it and all those type of things, because you know we've talked about this personally, and you seem to have a good grasp on what's going on and you know what's lacking in our world for understanding on the topic anyway. But so anyway, just give us a little breakdown about yourself and how you maybe came into all this, and then you know we'll talk a little bit more. Go ahead.
I'm a mom of five kids and seven grandkids. All the kids are grown. They weren't when I began this search in the mid-1990s. It began to occur to me that Germany was not getting a fair shake. I wrote an essay on 4th of July about how everybody else can celebrate their histories, trotting out their historical criminals, Soviet Union, us, everybody, except Germany. And if the issue is, well, you know, they had violated a number of international laws and therefore they don't have the right to have their history, then I would contend, well, so did every ally. But at the time, no computer. I had no computer at the time. And so I began to do some research, Germany Time books, encyclopedia, and also magazines. And there was one magazine that came out in 1995 about essentially along the lines of book, Hitler's Willing Executioners, where every German was guilty. And it was a feature in Newsweek, I believe. And so I absconded with that from the dental office where I was and copied it off and then returned it, which I still have it. And there were just, the more information I accrued, the more I realized that Germany was not getting a fair shake. And I wanted them to get a fair shake because it seemed like as the fate of Germany went, so did us. So did we. So if they were going down the tubes, we were going down the tubes too. And I wanted to be able to see them succeed. Well, you know, one person isn't going to do anything. So we eventually acquired what's called Web TV, which allowed internet through your TV. And I began to do some searching. I went over to a friend's house and spent hours looking for various topics. It was almost impossible. I just didn't kick into the right words. I was close. I was looking for German bashing, and there actually is, I believe, in the IHR, an article about that. So I almost got close. I found Friends of the German Corner, which are not friends, unless you're talking about Lederhosen or Kuchen or something where it's non-political. Once I started asking why can't Germany have the same celebration of their holidays like everybody else does, I eventually got kicked off with an admonition from a friend who I eventually met. She advised me to go to the Zundel site. Ernst Zundel's now wife was running a site essentially like a college course. You had Holocaust 101, 201, 301, 401. It was advanced, essentially, knowledge about the Holocaust. I felt like I'd fallen into a pile of cream. This was home. I was home. I mean, I scarfed up every single piece of information. Did 6 million really die? 66 questions of the Holocaust. I visit the IHR. I learned about Icebreaker and the importance that Hitler did a preemptive strike on the Soviet Union. It would kind of accelerate from there. I learned that Ernst Zundel was involved in litigation in Canada because of his position of having published Did 6 million really die? And in that sense, essentially met Paul Fromm, who was part of the, he wasn't really part of the defense team, but he was part of the defense effort. And he would always kind of, you know, I guess a scribe, if you will. He would write everything down, and then he would, you know, put it out on his website and so on. And I learned some things from there, but he didn't know anything about the Third Reich. And I wanted to know something. It began to be a search on my own. I met some of the, if you will, celebrities, I suppose, in the struggle. I found more of the information like on IHR and CODO and Adelheid Institute. These are all revisionist sites with their various personalities who provided and shared and there was enormous amount of material. There was no way I was going to run out of something to read on the subject. So unfortunately, the past 15 or 16 years, it's been less aggressive for me. The past 5 months, now 6 months almost, it's been an absolute glut of just, it's almost like I'm starving and just ingesting everything I can find. Mm-hmm. Is that what you were looking for?
You know, I mean, that's good. I mean, so basically, you've done your own research. I mean, you know, you did a lot of research, and you come to your own conclusions. And why don't we get into a little bit about your because I want to talk about the early days of Germany, right?
Absolutely. Well, not the early days. We're not going back as far as Bismarck, but you're talking about maybe the early, because that was really crucial. Bismarck united Germany.
Let's start with Versailles. They lost the war, and then in Versailles that's where Germany got kind of screwed. So that lays, I think,
not
the foundation.
Kind of. They got royally shafted. I mean, there's no other way to put it. Any historian who is honest with you will say, yes, it all began there. And some will say they blame the rise of Hitler because of Versailles. Others will credit the rise of Hitler because of Versailles. Before that, Hitler, as you probably know, born in Braunau, Austria, had aspirations of being an artist in architecture, and he was great. The work that I see, the artistry he does, it was amazing. But the powers that be, and I don't know if they're Jewish or not, said that he had no talent. also, so he went to Germany and arrived in Munich about the time that World War One was beginning, and he signed, he enlisted. He was an amazing soldier. He was not a shirker. He did everything he possibly could. He earned 4 medals. One of the medals nobody gets. He discovered what he was not allowed to be promoted from corporal because they said he didn't have the ability to lead. Okay, so he was denied the promotion. He discovered he had a talent for the gift of public speaking. And so after he fought vehemently, if there was a front, he was the first one to go. You know, he wasn't afraid of combat. He was injured. If you recall the peace of Christmas of 1914, mm-hmm. and all the soldiers came out of their trenches and were, you know, drinking wine and beer and singing Christmas songs and having a time. It looked like a real unity thing. He refused to come out because it was a violation. It was a fraternization. It was a violation of their purpose in the war. He was very strict about what was right and what was supposed to be done. And so when he learned that the World War One was over, that Germany, who did not start the war, I believe it was killing the Archduke Ferdinand and Sarajevo and Bosnia or something, and so Germany as an ally was drawn into it. By the end of the war, they were made blame for the entire thing, and as a result, Versailles required that they lose various properties. The French, they were supposed to have reparations. Everybody was supposed to get a piece of Germany. Everybody was supposed to get reparations. Germany didn't pay it fast enough, so I think France took Alsace-Lorraine, and they were carving up Germany like a piece of a buck that they caught in the forest. And of course, Hitler knew this. What happened to Germany as a result of Versailles, and demanding the gold that Germany had, plunged into a horrible depression, where Hitler had even said, or it was said that once you get paid in the afternoon, you'd better rush over to the store with your wheelbarrow full of money, or the prices will have risen by then, and you won't be able to buy anything. It was hideous. He saw this. The communists were out of control. They thought that they had a leg hold in Germany by this point.
What year are we talking now?
About 1921 or so.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Let's see. Hitler was outraged by the subsequent Treaty of Versailles, which deprived Germany of various territories, demilitarized the Rhineland, and imposed other economically damaging sanctions. And he was unable to accept that German army had lost the war. And he was convinced, because the army was excellent, he was convinced that the politicians and the communist revolutionaries that he was stabbed in the back by a great Jewish conspiracy. I can't say he's wrong.
Right.
And so he was able to rally, and it was in 21, he was able to rally a number of people to the National Socialist German Workers' Party, NSDAP, and that's from where the Allies got the, it's not even an acronym, it's a bastardization of the term using Nazi, and right. I refuse to use it. So right. Anyway, he had quite a following, and there was, as you probably know, all the street fighting between the communists and the nationalists and the national socialists. The Freikorps party was probably closer to what Hitler's aims were. There was a lot of consolidation, a lot of fracturing. It just was a place out of control, and this was just the beginning. This wasn't even the worst of it. And so he thought that the best way, which also the communists did, was an open revolution. And as we know, that didn't work. There were some people killed. He had his almost landmark speech when he was tried before he went to Landsberg prison. He had everybody enraptured. Everybody was wrapped around his finger. He was talking about the honor of Germany, and basically every the betrayal at Versailles, and he was in his element. And so, of course, when he went to Landsberg prison and he wrote, you see the pictures of him. I said, you know, that's what I remember when Ernst was in prison. He was very well treated. He had a well-decorated cell. They fed him nicely, unlike in Canada. And yeah. I thought, yeah, that looks like the picture of Hitler in Landsberg looks just like what Ernst had to deal with, although it is prison and you can't go anywhere. That democracy was ridiculous. I mean, that was out of the question. The only hope to a lot of people, as it turned out, was Hitler. It cost 500,000 marks to buy a loaf of bread. He said, the wheelbarrows aren't even big enough to carry the money in. Wow. And so this is not a time for silence. Anyway, so Hitler spent his time in prison. He decided after that the best way to acquire power and, it wasn't power for power's sake. You need the power, you need the confidence of the people, is to do it through the democratic process. Okay, so there would be various activities to try to generate membership for the National Socialist Party. Enters in Berlin. Berlin was probably, Berlin made Sodom and Gomorrah look like a tea party.
Right.
It was the most vicious, it was the most vile. Because of the problem with the economics, people couldn't make a living. Mother and daughters would go out in pairs as prostitutes. There were 100,000 prostitutes in Berlin. It was the mecca of every homosexual person. Bertolt Brecht and his cronies went there. Marlene Dietrich, who was bisexual, she was in Berlin. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was like a magnet for the worst refuse. The only good thing is that if they were in Berlin, they weren't in it throughout Europe. They collected in Berlin, huge. You think, well, what were the National Socialists doing? Well, there were like 200 membership. Hitler sent Goebbels to Berlin to generate more membership. And so when he got there, Hitler had said he hated Berlin. He absolutely hated Berlin. And it's like he wouldn't even go there. So he sent Goebbels. So he went there to increase the membership. There were 250,000 Communist Party members there. It really makes you wonder, or it really isn't a wonder, when the Communist Party is in place, the society is out of control.
Right.
Now, I can say that because, okay, they had a 200 membership in 26, I believe. By 1933, they had 1 million. They acquired some of the seats in the Reichstag. I'm not sure if it was called that then. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, when he took over, what was just an absolute important point, though, is the obscene books, pornography, and communist literature were rampant at the time. However, when Hitler came to power in 1933, all the roaches and the vermin of Berlin, including Marlene Dietrich and a number of Jewish individuals, because they saw the writing on the wall, they head out. And, of course, where did they go? Yeah. Ta-da! The United States. Lucky us. Yeah. So what Hitler did then, if anybody left behind, the communists, and usually they were violent, there was no question, they were arrested. Of course, he accumulated. You've heard of the book burning. The book burning. He's destroying all these classics. He's burning Bibles. No, he collected all the books dealing with sexual perversion, any obscenities, pornography, of course, communist literature. That's what was burned.
Right.
And it said that his clampdown will force Jews, promiscuous liberals, and gays such as Marlene Dietrich, a known bisexual, to leave for the U.S. Okay, yeah, lucky us. So anyway, things began to change, as you know, but that's a little bit of the history, and I do mean thumbnail sketch of the history of Versailles. And the government changed hands, I don't know, 6 times by the time Hitler came to power. And as it was, he was just the chancellor, right?
Yeah.
He wasn't really in charge until Hindenburg, I guess it was, died. But once that happened, then he was, you know, created the right to rule or whatever it was that.
Well, I guess Hindenburg, you know, he was kind of like forced into it because he saw the power. I mean, the how popular Hitler was, and he had to kind of like just give in. I mean, it's like what do you do? I mean, you know, of course, I think a lot of a good information if people want to understand this even better, right? I mean, more information on it, they can look at the video. The greatest story never told, and that would probably fill them in with, you know, all the stuff in between, because that got into all that type of stuff, you know, showing what
absolutely
happened.
Absolutely, absolutely, you couldn't help but feel bad. I mean, it almost made you cry or throw up when they were talking about Berlin, and then how all that was just settled. It was dealt with summarily, you know, absolutely definitively. No question. Done. Hitler came to power in at the end of January in 1933. New world. And it was just amazing. And the vermin knew they had it. You know, they were done. Yeah. I find that interesting. How would they know that? You know, he's supposed to be such a horrible person, have all these weird, you know, psychopathic morals, and yet they're the ones that left when he came to power.
Right. it's amazing. I find it amazing how they built up, you know, so much of the war machine in such a short period of time. It just seems like they really went to town there. You know,
during the Weimar Republic, the Germans were not allowed to have a military force in any way. Goering found a way around that by providing an air force that was not an air force, but it looked like a sports club where they did a lot of flying, and that's where he was training his aviators.
Right. That was smart. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Germans aren't stupid. Okay, and he eliminated the crushing unemployment that Germany suffered. He gave millions of people. I'm going to read this from, because this paragraph is essential, from The Greatest Story Never Told. Gave millions of people new confidence and indeed welfare. They were doing better, much better. When Hitler assumed power in 1933, there were 7 million unemployed Germans, the highest per capita unemployment rate in Europe at the time. And only his first year in office, an unprecedented over half of those were helped back to work. Hitler's brilliant and innovative ideas included building motorways, the length and breadth of the country, with housing units provided for workers. The workers' families would then eagerly spend the newly earned wages, contributing to a fast-growing economy. Priority was given to health and fitness of the nation, especially the youth, and particularly after this stringent times during the Weimar Republic where people couldn't eat because they couldn't afford to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Free health care, generous financial support was provided for expectant mothers. The world's first anti-smoking campaigns, he didn't like smoking, were also introduced. He also didn't drink. In addition, it was now government policy to protect the environment and wildlife. And so I don't, you know, if that's a psychopath, you know, where do we get one?
I know. Yeah, it's amazing, huh? They always villainize them, but they don't know anything about them. I mean, what are you going to do?
Well, they don't want to. Can you imagine how they, just this, I have this in pages, just this one page alone, and they'd have to say, oh, that can't be true. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, but once they read it and see that that's what happened, on that, oh my gosh, you know, it would absolutely transform their thinking. But no, they don't want their thinking transformed. They want to, those that promote this the hardest are, do not want Hitler to be considered anything but the villain who tortured them. Now, suppose that isn't true, and then now all the Judeo-Christian people have to give up their abeyance to Israel. holy smoke, we're going to have a world, the whole dynamic's going to change. How are we going to survive this?
That's right, those Judeo-Christians.
Yeah, the oxymoron of our time.
The Judeos. We call them the Judeos. Well,
yeah,
we don't even want to recognize that half of it, do we? I mean, they just a horrible.
No, it's a rather new anomaly. Yeah. I think it's some brainiac Jewish person came up with that because they knew how stupid Christian people can be when they invoke the Israel mantra, and then they think, oh yeah, we can't say anything against Israel. You say anything against Israel, you're doomed forever. So, somebody did say that to me. But.
Well, I mean, it's a shame people don't get it. So anyway, Germany, they got cooking again, and then of course, what, 1933, we see what happened with the Jews boycotted Germany.
Yes.
And that was a big thing, and then you brought this to my attention. In 1939, they ended up siding with Churchill. The Jews actually went on the side with Churchill to fight, on the side of the Allies, I guess you call them, against Hitler.
I'm not a military strategist, but that looks like treason to me. Also, a reason to, essentially isolate them, like what they did in the States. You know, you've heard the Japanese were interned. Did you also know the Italians and also the Germans were interned in the United States and Canada? But all three were.
I didn't know that. The Italians were interned.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Sorry about that. Yeah, we're a fine bunch, aren't we? Yeah, absolutely. You were part of.
Oh, just.
Good.
No, you're saying the Italians?
Who do you think was at Christian Hospital?
Well, I thought it was just
Germans. Germans and Italians. Oh. I think there was Italians.
Oh, it's okay.
That could be Italians.
Well, no, we're talking to see in Framingham. We had a hospital here. It was called Cushing Hospital, where a lot of they sent Germans here to the hospital here.
Yes.
I guess. And they
worked around the.
They worked around the grounds. That's what they did. Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
You know? So anyway, I mean,
that's slave labor, by the way. But
right.
The internment were for all of the Axis powers. Now, none of the individuals who were interned ever, or their leadership in any way ever, said that they were going to throw all their support for anybody else. They said, well, we're here to, we're the fifth column, we're going to subvert you. None of them did. They just assumed that would be the case. And that's something that Ursula Haverbeck, the feisty lady who actually told about this type of thing on German TV, and there have been others who have said that I think Mark Weber said this too, that the very things that the Germans were charged with in Nuremberg were the things the Allies had done imposed that on them, that they didn't actually do them, but because the Allies had done, now they had we did this, why don't we say the Germans did it? Nobody's going to doubt that.
Right.
And they wove this huge, gigantic myth based on their crimes, not German crimes.
Right, yeah. Yeah, they had to divert attention off themselves, and they had to put it on the Germans. I mean, that's the only way they could do it, you know?
That's exactly right. And Hitler said at the beginning of The Greatest Story Never Told, he said, the victor will never be asked if he told the truth.
Right.
And he knew that. You know, he kind of had that sense. He was just a regular guy, came from a, if you will, blue-collar family. His dad was pretty strict and also abusive. The main purpose that Hitler had was to protect his mom. People say, well, he had an abusive dad there. That explains why he murdered 6 million people. Okay, if that's the case, why aren't the rest of us who've experienced something like that doing that? But we're not. And he did not. He did not take that experience out on ruling a nation. He saw how Jews operated in Vienna when he was there right. trying to sell his paintings, and that formed his very generous opinion of them. And yet he did not treat them the way they probably should have been. He just wanted them exclusively out of the Reich. He got right. as many out, I think about 900,000 by the time the war was declared in 39, and he had plans as the 1C protocols were attempting to figure out, because I'm sure Hitler wanted to know how we were going to get rid of the rest of the Jews. And right. so after the war, and right. I know that was a concern, and I'm very certain he believed that he would be victorious in Russia. And right. therefore, because they were a bastion of a lot of them, as you know, because the communists were ripe with Jews in all of their upper echelons. You know, Hitler's going to have to deal with them. Actually, they would have been executed. There's no problem there. We're not trying to get them out of the country. We'll just execute them. And, you know, I can't fault him for that at all. But right. but Hitler did not do a raising of cities or raising of populations. He took the person that was the criminal, and he knew which ones those were. He executed the criminals. He did not destroy entire communities because the criminal lived in that, in that right. community. I think that was a British affectation, if you will.
Right, but he had a perfect right to do that. I mean, that, you know, that was his right to do that.
Well, sure.
You know?
You execute your criminals. You execute. If I were going into a place that they were firing on me, I wouldn't execute the soldiers. I execute the officers, and starting with the top ones, and I would find out what part each played. If one was a officer of the kitchen or something, well, he wasn't going to be. And Hitler was very just in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, let's. Online today, I think, was it that they said that Ursula Haverbeck there is going. They
yes.
raided her house. Did you see that? Yeah.
Yes. Yes, I did.
So
I think they arrested her. Yeah. I made a comment, as others have. Well, I bet they feel really big that they arrested an 87-year-old woman.
Yeah.
As I bet they do. That's what they pride yeah. themselves in. They go after Nazi sympathizers. They go into Canada and the U.S. and drag them out. I don't care if they're 95 years old.
Yeah,
and take them back, and they're going to run them through the ringer. Yep.
Right, right. Real tough people, you know, real cowards.
Yeah, well, that's
you know?
That's the mark of a bully. It's a bully.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
what's going to happen is this show is going to conclude, but I mean, we could continue on if you want. I mean, it's gonna be just it won't be on the program though. It will be still
That's
on
okay.
Skype. Yeah. So just I'm just gonna basically we'll just sign off on it. So for anybody that is listening to this, it's only a half hour show in this show. So we had some technical problems getting online, and. This is that ended of it. So, we want to thank Diane for being on this half hour of the show, giving some of her expertise on the subject matter. And
thank
we'll
you.
Continue.
You're very
on,
kind.
Yeah. Well, we'll continue on Skype after this concludes. You'll hear what happened. It's just gonna wind down, and then it will kind of. I think we'll just shut off the. Shut off the board when I'm on, but I think Skype continues to work. I haven't really gone over on the Skype end of it, so it's going to end right now. All right, so it ended. Okay, so we're still on Skype. Well, okay, so
are we?
Yeah, we're still on the Skype, I believe. It's just we're not on the Blog Talk anymore. All right, so that's fine. We could still talk.
I have something.
Go ahead.
I have something that I found that I did not realize how desperate Germany was right after World War One. They were absolutely in danger of being taken over by communists. There were 6 million German Communist Party members in the country.
Wow. And 1 million voted.
And 1 million voted? All right.
6 million in the country.
Wow.
6 million.
Yeah,
okay, there we got the number.
Yeah.
Okay. And that he was the 55th member of the NSDAP. But, of course, in their attempt to make themselves known, they were seriously outnumbered. And yet they still strove to deal with the communist invasion, knowing, particularly, I suppose, rumors were coming back or word was coming back what happened in Russia. The Tsar's family had been assassinated. There was this iron fist type of response. And there's no way that any self-respecting German, in fact, the communists had expected Germany to roll over. They actually were prepared for them to do. They did not expect Russia to be the one that would take to this. They were expecting one of the European companies, particularly Germany, and Germany was being focused upon. And so the fact that it did not, you talked earlier about, God's plan. Well, he did not plan that Europe should be overrun by the communists. And if nothing else, I think Hitler was there to prevent that from happening.
Right.
So, what? No, go away.
Wait, we're on a broadcast. Go away.
Go away. I am on a broadcast, so go away. It's on a Skype thing. She wanted to talk to you. I do not want that to happen at this point.
Well, no, she could talk.
Oh, really? Yeah. I'll just tell her there are, 20,000 listeners? She says it's a sin to lie, so I probably shouldn't say that. But I know the capacity that Skype has. So, anyway, she
This conversation here is just between us, me and you, and Joe and you.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
This isn't going out to...
I fib.
I
fib.
Oh, okay. We don't want to say anything. Go ahead.
You don't want to say anything?
No.
Or you don't want her saying anything?
No. Does she want to talk or something?
She want to talk to you.
Oh, well, I don't know. I mean, I could talk to her another time.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You're on your phone, right?
I am.
Okay, so that's fine. I mean,
she wanted me to hand it over so she could talk to you.
Oh, yeah, right. why don't you tell, how'd you come across me in your travels here? Tell Joe how you came across me or something. Because, we ended up... you ended up getting something to me on Facebook, and then you saw my videos or something?
I saw your postings, and there were quite a few of them. And I'm in about, I think, 5 different kinds of discussion groups involving Israel, the Jews, but mostly, no, it's almost 10. In particularly, Ich bin Sylvia Stoltz, a number of German historians, like you mentioned earlier today, Justice for Germans. And it was after what happened to me in January, as I've mentioned to you, I was catapulted back as if it was 1999 again. And so I was in pursuit of this information in earnest then. And so now, I'm back, and we have more information, more resources. I know more people. And so when I was looking through, you're already on my friends list because, your sympathy for Germany, that gave you, even though I didn't know you, that was an automatic pass.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually ask, I could see by your postings what you stood for. I would ask oftentimes, where did you see my name? If they responded with anything, but I liked what you posted on, various sites, then they would either be deleted or not accepted. So Anyway, I saw that, and then I got to, for some reason, I still, to be honest with you, cannot figure out what it was that caused me to think, well, let me just see what, I usually look, every person that comes on, I look at their, whatever they have for the about part, about themselves. And you
yeah.
had the oddest birth date. And I knew you weren't the same age as my 100-year-old grandmother. So, and
yeah.
so
yeah.
that was when I started asking you about that. I was curious when your real birthday was, and
yeah.
and then you had something else there that, oh, what really did it, though, was you researched the Holocaust in Germany.
Yeah, a doozle.
And
double.
I said, there's no way.
I thought the University of Dusseldorf, or whatever it is. I had to
applaud you for your moxie in that. If it wasn't true, I mean, if it was true, obviously, then you know you'd be pretty gutsy. If it wasn't true, it's pretty creative.
Yeah,
so
I never even thought about that. The fact that, you know, Germany, I didn't think about it because, you know, you couldn't do that today, you know. I mean, come on.
Well, 2.5 weeks ago, you couldn't do it there either, and
yeah.
or so whenever
yeah.
you started on Facebook.
Yeah.
See, so when I saw that, the little flags went up, and I thought this individual is very unusual. That and, you know, it truly, if you had now, Mark Weber had gone to school in Germany, and he speaks fluent German. He doesn't have an accent, and I thought, well, I don't think I remember him mentioning anything about taking courses in debunking the Holocaust. So, but he wasn't in Dusseldorf. He was. I think he might have been in Munich. I'm not sure, but
yeah,
anyway,
so
tell
my brother Joey, like you know Mark Weber very well, right?
Yes. Yes.
And
how much of that do you want me to tell him?
Well, no. I mean, Joe, hold on.
Have you heard of a guy named Brad Love up in Canada?
Yeah, Brad Love. Let me put it this way: when he found out that my husband and I were not together in 2010, he calls me. When he finds out that we were not together in 2012, he calls me. Yeah, Brad Love and I are very good friends. I'm not going to go out with him. But he lives in Alberta in Fort McMurray right now. He's still being pestered by the powers that be. I send him, he's a little light on the Holocaust issue, so I've been sending him information. He reads. He doesn't get on the computer. And frankly, that's one person. He's already in trouble just writing letters to officials. He gets on the computer. He's going to...
10,000 of them.
Yeah. Yep.
Wow.
I've read them. I know what he writes. It isn't threatening. It isn't anything that they say. They just don't like him doing it. He'll cut out a paper newspaper, reads the paper, cut out a newspaper article about crime in Calgary or crime in Toronto, but mostly the Alberta officials. And he'll send it to them with a note and say it's all about immigration or something like that. He's not profane. He's you know, and it's very short, and he's done 10,000 of those. He sends them to all the politicians, universities, Jewish groups, everybody. Nobody is, and they just decided that they were offended by his letters and his inference of how terrible multiculturalism is. And he never minces words. That's one thing about him. He does not mince words. He tells you exactly what he thinks. Gets him into a lot of trouble, but that's only because they don't want him to.
He's been in jail for like 2.5 years, off and on.
Longer than that. It's been, let me see, he got out and he was up in Ontario for a while. I went up to see him. Actually, he was going to, what was the issue? They're so awful, and they always make it. That's why I thought you'd be last in your presentation, because they made him last, his case, and he was the stupidest civil things, and everybody nodded and yes and agreed with the judge, yes, this is a good thing, and he was the last one, and he was just trying to get his paperwork to be able to present his case, in fact, on something that he wasn't even guilty of, and but they said he was, and so they were dragging their feet on it, and it that didn't get resolved, but he finally got out, and then he went back to Fort McMurray, and he started causing trouble there, and everybody knows who he is, and you may have this to look forward to. And so if he did anything they didn't like, they'd call the police, and then they'd be different here, though, in the States as opposed to Canada. And so then they would put him in, they drag him in and try to determine if he violated his probation, or he's not out on bail, he's on probation. And then he'll go to, and then they decided during one of these times that he needed to go back to Edmonton, which is in Alberta. And he had to face a charge because he had missed his court date because he was in prison in Ontario. So, you know, they're really trying to mess around with him, and he knows it. He knows everything is really screwed up there. And he's not going to stop. And they're just going to have to deal with it. He is about, 57, 58. You know, he's not a young man, but he's not.
I think he's like 57.
Yeah.
At the top, so, I listened to 2 years ago.
I like to listen to him talk. However, when you listen to him at the dinner table versus listening to him in a public place, the language is different. And he has absolutely no consideration for the fact that I'm female. He just absolutely blasts away, and that's just Brad. That's just the way he does things. He's very, very profane. He punctuates everything with a lot of profanity.
You talking about Joe?
No, that's me.
you must be talking about my brother Joe. Yeah, okay.
I have no experience with Joe in that regard, but I do think, except like I said, Brad's a real light on the Holocaust issue. He doesn't have a lot of information. I am in the process of, I continually send him stuff that he needs to know. So maybe he will get up to speed on that.
Right.
So
yeah, but they'll come down on him when he does that.
That's right.
Yeah,
he invoked the big H.
Yeah.
They're gonna rain all sorts of ugly on him.
Oh. Well, that's interesting. it's funny, Joe just told me about him today, I think, right?
Because her ex was messing with his name.
Oh, because Paul knows him?
Well, he's probably trying to get him on her show, Carol and Yeager's show.
Oh.
He told him.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, yeah.
He was telling him. He told him.
I have his phone number if you need it.
All right.
It comes in my caller ID. Actually, he uses a phone that is, you know, one of those throwaway phones, but I have his address, and that may be the best way to get a hold of him. Calling him, I'm not sure that he has a regular phone. He has, you don't really have a regular phone. You continually get resupplied with the minutes and stuff. I suppose you pay for it every month or something, and they do that with you. You get through Walmart, right?
Well, no. I mean, mine's on my MasterCard. It gets paid every month on the MasterCard.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I have a home.
Automatic.
Have a home phone too. Yeah, we have a home phone too, but I mean, I don't use the home
phone. Oh, I know.
Phone, you know.
Brad has no home phone, and I can't swear to you that he has a specific number. We could reach him a lot better when he was in prison, and he would call pretty frequently, which was good. It was always good to hear from him because then we knew he was okay.
Yeah.
He was in litigation about 10 years, total of 10 years, for all the things that they were trying to do to him.
Wow. Unreal, huh?
Yes, it is. In fact, Jim, you sound exactly like him.
Oh, thank you.
Except for the British, the Boston accent. That, you know, he doesn't have that, but you sound exactly like him.
Well, I don't know if that's good or bad.
It's not, like, as you say, it is what it is. It's just it's one of the first thing I noticed, and it's just remarkable the similarity, except for again to the Boston accent, because Brad is from Alberta. So, which is the equivalent to, north of Montana and Idaho and that sort of thing, I think.
Oil fields or something?
Yeah, that would be the case. Well, now the oil prices are going up. Maybe they'll get restarted again. We were supposed to have oil sands agreement kind of with them, but it was the Keystone Pipeline, I believe, and Obama kiboshed that. So, and their jobs have really gone down the tube since the price of oil has gone down. So, but Brad always finds a way to make a living and usually works two jobs. He's a workaholic and, you know, it's just what he does. And he also says, like you do, what are you going to do? So there are a lot of... yes, you
when did
do.
I ever say that?
When we're talking about things.
Yeah, right.
Okay, is there another personality you are curious about?
Joe.
I suspect you know more.
I'm listening to his stuff. I already listened to his stuff a couple of years ago, but I was listening to it again today. Because, I mean, his case is just, it's horrible.
Whose case?
Brad Love's case.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And
it's just deplorable.
The more you read, it is. And but he's tough. He's really tough. And he hates his attorneys because he's had some really bad ones. They've advised him very terribly. Mm-hmm. And he pretty much wants to take care of it himself. And I can't blame him for it because I think he'd do a better job than any of them. And they just absolutely used him over the years. He had his dad has died. He had to go back to Toronto to bury his dad. I think his mom is gone. So I don't know. He's got a brother. Oh, sounds real similar, right? And
yeah.
They're essentially their position is like the Germans' position is for people like Ernst and who support Ernst. Quit doing that. Quit making the powers that be mad.
Right.
Well, Brad can't. You know, when he sees something that's wrong, he's got to say something about it. So.
Right. Yeah. Tell Joe about your talk with Ingrid.
You want me to tell him all of it?
Well, no. I mean, you called her the other day, and you caught up with her a little bit, huh? And
do you remember what I talked to her about?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like talk about what's going on with her and Ernest. I mean, you know,
she's waiting for him to come.
Joe read the Powell letter, so he knows now. I mean, I thought you didn't get the Powell letter, but I actually went over the Powell letter with you. How she's working to try to get him here, but
yes,
you know, that's a whole nother. I mean, what they did to him. I mean, what are you gonna do? I mean, it's just amazing. Think about it. Good.
I asked one of his supporters up in Canada. Christian Klein is head of a lot of German groups up there, and he's almost tireless in attempting to rally them. And these are people who are also refusing to acknowledge the issues of the Holocaust, but they also have that collective as well. And I believe they attended a meeting where Lady Michelle was speaking. And I don't know what Lady Michelle Renouf's beef is lately, other than the usual stuff. Usually she has a new focus. They will have like a memorial that she was in. Oh, yeah, that guy, that British guy, I think it was apologizing to the Germans a couple of years ago. And so they were talking about that. He was a general or something. And but anyway, so Christian gathers, or the people are gathered into this meeting, and it's usually in that area where they live anyway. But he says that he's getting kind of tired. Well, he's 80 years old. You wouldn't know it to look at him. But then, so he's getting kind of tired. He says he's feeling his age. I assured him that wasn't the case. And so he's very, very active in that way. So I hear how about things are going through him up there. He's the most consistent with communicating with me. So when I mentioned to him about Ernst possibly coming back, and I asked if he would be willing to come down to Tennessee, it's a bit daunting when you're 80. I can admit, I can understand that. I don't like traveling myself, frankly, but it isn't because I can't, where it becomes a bit more troublesome, especially going across the border. Going into the States is almost a nightmare. Our Homeland Security is horrid. Canada's is pretty good. They're very nice. They're very agreeable. Ours is hideous, which you might suspect. Yeah. So, as you know from the power letter, she's trying to get him to come back, be able to come back. He had a 20-year moratorium, which would have made it 2025 before he could come back. But she's been hustling to get this done and really wants to have this dedication of their library/museum center with him there. And I told her, I told you this too, Jim, that if he comes back, you'll have to get hotels in Kentucky because everything will be booked in Tennessee. She's not so sure. I know what she's encountered over the past. Okay, he went to prison in 2000. He went to Germany in 2005. So, the past 10 years, just that alone, and before how people had basically turned their back on her. So she may not know what a following. And I said, the internet is amazing, and people today on the sites I'm on, they know what's going on. It's not like these novices, some are, but everybody knows. And you will have, and she says, well, maybe I should get a big hotel. I said, you need to get a civic center or two.
Wow.
Because it's not going to hold everybody. Oh, wow. Can you imagine the old core? All the revisionists who've been, I'm listening to the one where Ernst is supposed to have talked about his struggle in Canada, which he did not. He alluded to it from time to time. There were a number of them there. And if Ernst comes back, you know, if they can put their ego aside, there will be a huge outpouring. Not only of Canada, the U.S., and people from England will be coming in, and Australia. It just will be an event, and it will be protested probably. And when he was taken away in, I think it was 2004, I'm not sure, where he was arrested in Pigeon Forge, is that right? And he was, they hid him. And where she didn't know where he was for days. I don't know if it was a couple weeks before they finally told her where he was, and he was going to be deported to Canada. And Thirlwall is a horrible prison, apparently. And that's where he stayed. Then he was sent to a West detention in Toronto, and that's where I got to meet him. And then he was deported from there to Germany. So, but anyway, I don't know if Joe can probably add more than what I did because he read the letter more thoroughly.
How old is Ernst?
He'd be in his 70s.
In the 70s?
So is Ingrid.
Wow.
I didn't know people would get that old. Yeah, I'll tell her you said that. You know, she has her own story, which I think you have, Greatest Story Never Told. She has their little pockets there of her testimony about what happened.
Well, I've listened to her whole. She has a whole testimony herself about what happened with the Germans and everything. I heard that whole thing, her whole story. Really nice story.
Oh, good for you. Great. Yeah. It was really great nice. When the Germans rescued her. She said, as you know, she was getting ready to get on a train to go to the Soviet Union, and the Germans came in, and there had already been trainloads of Ukrainians that had already been sent out. She was next when they came in, and she was just a kid, for Pete's sake. See, the Russians don't care. I wouldn't say Russians. Soviets didn't care about that. These are the things that they are imposing as crimes on Germany that they had committed.
Right.
And the Germans have to keep silent about it. That's an unconscionable too. Well, I don't have to. I'm part German, but not enough to justify this. But there's human decency for Pete's sake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, that'd be great if you can get here. But just saying that wouldn't happen until 2025.
If she had to wait that long, according to the
Well, that's 10 more years.
And see, she thinks that with the agreement with the powers that be, I suppose, immigration. Whichever Jew is in charge of that, you know, essentially you don't have to, you know, pay abeyance. I'm not sure without forking over her dignity and her principles and without closing down her website and her daily grams and so on, she's attempting to ameliorate the situation so that Ernst can come back earlier than his sentence.
Yeah. Joe, have you seen her new website?
No.
The Zendel site's nice. They got a nice site now. Well, much better than it was. The Zendel site. Real nice.
It is. I don't know that I could find the things that I found before. Like, you know, it looked like a college catalog on classes before. Oh. And I could find all sorts of things. Now they got all that convention crap up there and pictures and stuff. And so it's tough to navigate through that to get to the good stuff.
Yeah.
I probably could find it. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's a whole different look. That's all.
Yeah, it is very pretty. Looks like the place is very pretty too.
Yeah.
I hope I am able to go there. I would like to see her. She's very friendly. She's also very sympathetic of me as well, because she's known about my situation for years,
mm-hmm.
and she's heard things, and she's very sympathetic. And also the fact, I guess, maybe it might have made a difference that I wrote Ernst while he was in prison in Germany. So I wrote Brad when he was in prison. You get in prison, I write you. I write you every week. What I did with Brad is I took the book Death of a Superpower by Pat Buchanan, and
mm-hmm.
I tore it apart, page by page, and I started scanning it and pulling it together, and then I would send it to him. I sent him the entire book that way, and then he got out, and so then sent him the intact book. It's just a help because they're really confined, and there are very strict rules for Brad that I couldn't cut and paste, literally paste. I had to do, so I would cut and paste, and I'd take a picture of that. And then, but it didn't matter. They always came up with something new that they would object to. On
something they probably didn't want you to cut and paste because people put heroin in the glue.
Yeah, and you can't tell about that until it's too late, right?
Right, right. Well, no, I mean, that's what they do. You know, so they got to make rules for everybody.
I don't think it is for everybody. I think it was specially for Brad so that he couldn't get his mail. And I know that because they held, I don't know how many pieces of mail. I'd say hundreds, but he laid them all out. When he got out of prison, they gave him his mail. He laid it all out and it took a picture of it, everything that they had kept. It was, 100, 150 pieces of mail. And so to show how petty they are, a huge surprise.
Yeah.
I mean, he couldn't listen, read that mail?
Yeah, well, after he was out.
I mean, but he couldn't get those letters while he was in?
Nope.
He couldn't get those letters while he was in?
They held them.
Nope.
Are you kidding me?
Yep. Nope.
Wow. Evil, evil people, huh?
Yeah, they did that because they know it's supposed to affect the morale. Brad is a lot tougher than that, but could have. But when you don't hear from people or you don't hear from anybody on the outside, yeah, that can affect your morale. And they know that. And so, yeah, they just held it. So he read all these things after he got out.
Wow. Unbelievable. Vindictive people. So anyway,
well, that they're not really people, but okay, yeah, it's nice of you to say so.
Yeah. Well, you know, you got to watch the video that I did at the Selectmen's meeting, and you can see the type of town we live in. I mean, it's just I wish you could have seen the audience, because most of the people in the audience were from that cable program. And so it was
really.
Oh yeah, there was 15, at least 10 or 15 people in that audience that were representing the cable company, you know, there. So, but the only good thing that happened with this is being that I was the first guy to speak.
You set the tone.
I set the tone. George said. He goes, you deflated this deal.
Their egos were down. They didn't know what the hell to say after that one.
I would say so. Yeah, I would say so. And the fact that that you were an unhappy customer, you challenged them on their policies, they violated, and it would allow other people who weren't as egregiously offended to get up and express their offenses. Did they do that? Did you notice that somebody else got up like that?
Nobody's
been kicked off a cable like that.
We're the only ones that have ever probably been kicked off.
The only laws they've made in their policies and procedures after three fixings have been against us. That's it. They've only
backed up. But there is a modus operandi in that if they have done this to you, they've done littler things to other people. And I was just wondering if anybody stood up and complained
about their particular issues. I don't think
they've done anything.
No one complained about anything.
They're not supposed to pre-watch the shows. And they took our shows and used a toothpick. They sit down, and they must have spent... This isn't the first time we got kicked off the air. We got kicked off the air 2 years ago.
In 2010.
And you should have seen what they had. You should have seen what they had against us then. They must have had 100 hours dedicated to putting material on our shows.
Yeah.
I mean, it was incredible. Dedicated.
It was the Nuremberg trial.
Oh, it was pathetic. I mean, it was. They did the same thing this time, but not as much.
Right.
But they must have spent 100 hours.
Yeah, they spent a lot of time.
Spared no expense. It seems like I hope that they listened to them. They might learn something. You don't think so?
Well, you mean listen to the shows?
Yeah, you gotta know what you're accusing.
Well, they had to go through it to, you know, but when you're going through something like that to pin someone on something, you're not listening in it with an open mind to learn. You're listening to it with a closed mind.
I know.
It's a different mode.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. They still might not be able to help learning something, though. See, that's just the nature of truth.
Yeah.
Well, they're learning that we don't live in China.
worse than China. It's crazy.
Oh, gosh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I'm not so sure, actually. But maybe
you
the
come
same
up here,
as.
When you come up here, you'll see, you know, you can get a sense of how things are up here. I mean, it's just, it's an interesting place to live, you know?
Interesting place to live. Okay, that's the last time I heard you talk about it. You said it was hell. So I'm finding it a little.
Well, I mean, it's an interesting hell.
Okay. So, did it seem to go okay tonight? You think?
Yeah. Yeah, it went real good. In fact, we kept the recorder on.
How much is that going?
But you know, we got a minute. We got an hour and 8 minutes on the recorder, which is actually more than we need. But
okay.
I mean, that's okay. It was good. Good. I mean, I think if we do, I'd like to do this again. It's just I won't have a problem next time I do it. You know, I don't think.
Well, we kind of made the most of it, I think.
Yeah. Oh no. This is really good. I mean, you know, next time I can get, you know, I don't know if anybody on the Facebook even looked into it because the link really didn't work. So, and then I did put a comment up there I put a comment saying the show is on. So,
okay.
You know, but no one else called, but whatever. You know.
Was somebody supposed to call in? Is that kind of the point?
No. We had you on. You were a special guest.
Okay. Yeah. What I think it might possibly be an idea, if you wish a follow-up, we essentially went from officially 1919 through 1933, if we went from 33 to 39, up to the war.
Okay. Yeah.
That might be possible if there is a series, let's say, you would like to do. And I'm sure Joe has information. You both have information on this that it's not new to me. You know, the Nuremberg rallies, the dealing with Blomberg and Fritsch, that was not their finest moment. You know, a number of things that occurred in the, getting rid of the SA as a prominent police force, essentially. That's not the finest moment, but it was a kind of a gathering of power, and I wouldn't even say that. I would say making things like it's supposed to. Everything was all out of control, and then so he essentially took charge in 33 and made things right the way it was supposed to be. And a lot of heads rolled, apparently.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was incredible how he got things in the shape with all those obstacles against him, that he pulled it all together. Amazing. I just can't believe it. You know.
Well, what you do is you get rid of your obstacles. You get rid of your adversaries, your opponents. You attempt to hire good people. I can't say that was entirely the case, but you attempt to. Himmler probably. Well, I believe Heydrich was going to replace Himmler, and that's why Himmler wasn't too unhappy when he heard Heydrich had been assassinated. And so, you know, you've got all these little somewhat degree of infighting, which Hitler would not tolerate. A number of things are when we get into the 40s, if you will, the inconsistencies that we hear about what happened when the attempted assassination of Hitler and what happened to those who had done that. That was something that I learned. I had been misinformed. Hitler, I always thought, you know, Hitler wanted to see the pictures. He wanted to see the people who had betrayed him suffering. Not at all. He wouldn't have anything to do with it. He tossed the pictures. He did not want to see that. He didn't want to see the movie that was made. And the movie was not made in Germany. It was made in Switzerland. And it was staged. So it wasn't even a photo op, if you will. It was a production.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, little things like that, that, you know, really should shake us up about our preconceived notions of National Socialist Germany. I'm prepared to toss the whole thing out and just believe that they were probably the best thing on the planet, and then I'll find things that probably will, you know, just change that. But right now I'm good with that.
Right. No, I understand. Yeah.
I'm not a Nazi. I don't. Go ahead.
Right. No, I mean, who was the general that betrayed him? Was it Himmler? One of his high generals.
Doffenberg.
No. No, I know him. Wasn't him.
Okay.
It was one of his high generals that actually turned against him. He actually dismissed. He wanted nothing to do with him after, because he wanted to surrender or something. I don't know. I forget the name of him.
Oh, that wouldn't be Dönitz, would it? Because I remember somebody who wanted to, and it wasn't Hess either, because that was different. But and Hess wasn't a general, but you know.
Keitel's
not
Keitel. No. Hold on. I'll ask my Google. Okay, Google. Who is the general that betrayed him? Hold on.
There's going to be a list.
Heinrich Himmler.
Okay. How did he betray him?
Well, wait a minute. I mean, just it came up in Wikipedia. So.
Oh, well, then it must be true.
Not exactly. I was just going to say, that really needs to be taken with a grain of salt. You know, you should see what they say about you. No, I'm kidding.
I'm kidding. We know what everybody says. We know what anybody else says about us.
Yeah, right. Yeah, if you let your kids, if you let your kids read about it, they're going to think we're monsters.
Well, you remember what happened with my second one who Googled you. Right?
Well, she,
right?
Well, give me a hint.
Sent it to you. I sent what she found. You posted it on Facebook.
Oh, right.
You thought
it was
a mark.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, that was just a, yeah, sure. I got it. Yeah. Show me the whole class scenario.
Turn it around. Yeah, absolutely. Way to go. Oh, that's good. Oh, yeah, the Anschluss in the 30s, that was great. The War of Flowers. Man, that'll be great. There's a lot of stuff that happened. The takeover of... he really didn't want all of Czechoslovakia. He just wanted probably Silesia, just the German portion. But he got the whole thing. And yeah, all that happened in the 30s.
Yeah. Let's see. Rommel. Well, not really. I mean, it says it looked like Rommel, General Rommel, was turned against.
Yes. Yes. But he was field marshal. Yes, he was. He was one that was allegedly on the list. He allegedly for the assassination. That's right. That's exactly. Uh-huh. I'm not so sure. I'm willing to withhold judgment on that till I find out. I have, I'm not sure if I've got David Irving's book or not, and it depends when he wrote it if I decide I'm going to believe it.
Right.
It's in the living room. I don't want to run into my daughter again. So.
That's fine. all right, I'm trying to look at other ones. I thought it was one of the ones with, you know, the big name ones, but
you don't think Rommel's a big name?
Oh no, Rommel was, but he wasn't. He was in Africa. You know,
Africa,
like
he
was kind of like out of the picture a little bit. You know, he wasn't right where he was. You know.
No, eventually he was going to be.
Right. Yeah. That's true.
Did you see the movie with Tom Cruise?
Oh, yeah. That was disgusting.
It was the better of them. It's just that I'm trying to wrap my head around why they would do something like that. Now, there were a number, as you know, because you gave me that link to that bodyguard. Not a lot, but a couple of small assassination attempts that he may not even have been aware of.
Right.
But this one, he was right to have them executed. This was a betrayal. I'm just not sure if I'm missing a piece in this of why they really, why we're told that they wanted to do this.
Yeah.
I know the issue of the war, but I'm telling you, I'm not prepared to believe that all these guys. Now, admittedly, the military upper echelon weren't fond of Hitler, particularly when he took over as kind of commander-in-chief. But still, and of course, the war was going badly, and I think they were attempting to sue for peace, I suppose. But when you got the SS, did not. They were prepared to fight to the last man. I thought, what's wrong? If it's true, what is wrong with these guys?
Right, right.
What are they thinking?
They could have been gotten to, you know, someone got to them or something. I don't know.
Who?
Right? I don't know. Well, who knows? Of course, they're going to look at it like they were doing it for the country, you know, or something.
Oh,
like
of course.
That.
Of course. That's true.
So, I mean, what are you going to do about that?
There were no more Jews in Germany, so there wasn't that influence.
Yeah.
The Russians hadn't arrived yet. Wasn't that influenced? France was still occupied, so it wasn't there. Actually, I'm not sure they were. It was in 44, I think, that when this happened, so they may not have been. But I don't know. It's just it's not right. It's just not right.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I hear you. Well, I'm trying to think. I mean, let's see. My battery on my computer is, well, it's getting down there. I got a laptop that I use to do this.
Good.
But at least you see how this works. It works pretty good, huh? I mean, once it works.
I mean, think so. Yes, you guys are very clear. I'm assuming I am because you haven't complained about it. And
oh no, it's excellent. It's coming through great. Yeah.
That's one of the benefits of my voice carrying. It carries. So that's good. And so I'm. The questions were, you played to my strength, if you will, because we had prepared this. And
right.
I'm would have to review again the things that happened, a lot of stuff that happened in the 30s. And I think a focus on the stuff that we have been told is true and is not true. One of the things, and I've mentioned this to you before, is that in all of Germany in the 30s, there were 55,000 people in prison in all of Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Now, okay, that sounds like a lot, but not when you compare it to the amount of people that are in the gulags.
Yeah.
And that number's in the millions.
Wow.
So the Soviets were running this thing, and the people who were in prison were the criminals, the ones who were breaking the law, and it was very reasonable. There were a number of camps in Germany. I'm not sure. I don't know what, a dozen maybe. Of course, you divide. And also, have you seen the accommodations of these camps during the 30s?
Right.
They had sheets on their beds.
Yeah.
They had. They were taken. You know, they don't even have that in the States.
Right.
They were taken care of, even though they shouldn't have been. The communists, the virulent Jews, the ones that were breaking the law. Whatever that was, it told them 55,000. Now, I understandably, Germany is a smaller country than the Soviet Union, but when I still think comparably, the Soviet Union had way more in their gulags that proportionally. Than Germany had in their camps.
Right.
So, and also that was during the time, the 30s, during the time of the transfer agreement. Hitler wanted to get them out of the Reich, and he made a deal with the Jews and sent 900,000 of them with their possessions intact. That's another lie we're told.
Yeah.
And being allowed to resettle. I'm not sure, to be honest with you, how he would have dealt with the Palestinian issue after the war. If there was a time, all of a sudden you've got all these Jews. There wouldn't have been a Balfour Agreement, though. All these Jews invading Palestine, and now you may have a problem between the two. I think he would have probably have somebody go down there and, you know, take care of whatever issues. But there wouldn't be a annihilation with what's going on today.
Right.
So. That's another one. And
right.
The essential. Anyway, go ahead.
Right. Well, I mean, next, maybe next week we can continue. I mean, on with some more points. I mean, I'm reading the booklet again, 6 Million Die booklet. So that's got a lot of good stuff. I mean, a lot of good points in it.
Well, yeah, it addresses all the myths.
Right.
All the wrong teaching, and it's if you haven't read before, and I know you have, it will absolutely change your life. It just you'll come out of there and you'll think, I can't believe anything.
It just cuts it right, cuts the whole thing right down,
Oh, every point. The biggest thing is the issue with the crematorium. What this guy on the 14 minute thing was presenting more probably than anything else about the failure. You know, if you thought about it, what you're thinking about is impossible.
right.
for the kind of crematorium that they had.
Right.
And that's the biggest argument, apparently, of all of them.
Yeah, I did a whole thing. I did a whole video on that, on the crematorium, how. But anyway, one of the big things, the simple thing about Auschwitz, they, you know, Auschwitz only ran basically 42, 43, and 44. Only 3 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they claim 4 million people died. All right. So just using the 3 years, that would be 3,000 people a day, every day for 3 years. I mean, that,
7 days a week. Yep.
7 days a week. 7 days a week. You know, I mean, it's just incomprehensible. I mean, you know.
It's not possible. Yeah, not with those ovens.
That's the whole point. I mean, you know, even with 50 of the ovens, which they had 50 ovens in all the camps, even with all 50 of them running, and again, that's 24 hours a day, you couldn't do more than, 1,000. You know, 1,000 bodies a day.
I mean, the ovens would implode. They'd never survive.
I was reading about the breakdown. They said that an oven only lasted 3,000 cremations.
Okay, I thought it was a period of time. They had to be arrested, if you will, after 24 hours or something.
I believe it was 3,000 cremations, I think it was. Well, 3,000
okay.
hours.
Okay.
And they had to be rebricked.
Whoa, that's going to take time.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, figure that one out. I mean, 3,000. I mean, they're saying 3,000 a day were being put in them. I mean, okay, we'll give you that. Okay, so that means they had to shut them down to fix them.
Did they mention how much ash that would produce?
Oh no. They figure it out. 8 pounds of ash for each body, right? 8 pounds.
And where did that go?
Well, they claim it went in the river.
Okay, there would have been evidence of that. Even aerial photographs could have detected that. So, river, it would have.
You would have got. Oh, here was my big beef with it. Teeth don't burn, and it's very hard to crush them. And there would be a lot of teeth. Somewhere.
That's true. And I don't recall in any of the cliche movies them gathering. They gathered gold teeth, presumably, but there was not the presence of regular teeth, particularly with the numbers they're talking about. So, there was no dramatization about it at all. So, yes, you have to consider that in something like this. And it's just the magnitude of something like this is beyond the scope of...
Yeah.
That the Germans are just horrible people would risk a war to murder, and that's essentially what we're told, by the way. All these people. Yeah, so, excuse me, but I've read Grimm's fairy tales. I'm prepared to believe that Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs happened before this did.
Yeah, right. No, I know. I mean, people want to, you know, they'll believe the impossible. I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, they don't get it that you have to show that it could happen, and that can't happen. There's just no way it could happen. It's crazy.
They can't accept. And, man, you know this. Once you start challenging that, you invoke the evil beast in every person.
Right, I know.
People who love you and care about you, you start talking about this, they'll turn on you. I'm telling you, this is the acid test right here.
Right. No,
I'm not even talking about my kids.
Right. No, I understand. Yeah. I know. Well, at least all the people around, like me, you know, me, Joe, my friends, close friends, anyway, we all don't believe in it. So, I mean, yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, but other than that.
I
mean, you know, it's not a lot of people, but it's, you know, it's better than nothing. So.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That's, you're not going to fight the beast in the sense that you'll be equally matched. All you have is the truth and your persistence.
Right.
And that, which accounts for a great deal. Did Joe have any other questions? Did you have any other questions to ask on his behalf?
No. No, I guess Joe's okay.
For now.
Yes. Okay. Well, I mean, you know.
Can I ask Joe a question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
Okay, thanks. Which of the pictures did you select that was my daughter and I? Because I've got four.
Are you out in a field somewhere or something? You out? I don't know.
Oh, that's actually that's my yard. By the way, it's about an acre of that. But yeah, it looks like a field from that perspective. That was last September. But you wouldn't be able to describe. The younger person, which obviously it wouldn't be me, that would be the girl.
Well, she's taller than you.
They all are.
Black hair? She's got black hair.
Okay, that's Heidi then. Okay, that's my oldest. Yeah, she's the only one with black hair.
So she's the one that lives in Ohio?
That is correct. And she's also 6 foot tall. So yeah,
wow.
She's definitely taller than me.
Wow,
yeah.
She's taller. Yeah.
Yes, wow. That's true. They all are. They all are taller than I am.
She's your oldest one?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Her dad's tall.
Right.
Which would make sense. Yeah, okay, well that's it. Yeah, those are, you probably picked the one I don't like, but If it's a picture of, like, waist up, that's fine. If it's a full-length picture, it's not one of my favorites.
Well, I don't think it's a... It shows from the feet up.
It shows you from your feet up, I think.
Yeah, thanks a lot. But, okay. Some things shouldn't be worn and pictures taken in. So that's the lesson I learned from that. But
well, whatever. Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about that. Every time Joe has a picture taken, he cracks the camera.
Oh, he does not. I've seen the pictures taken of Joe.
Do you know, I punched Jimmy in the nose and I broke his finger? Oh, come on, Joe. What a stupid thing to say.
At what point and why?
You got to think about that one.
Yeah. yeah, that's. I'm sure there's a story behind it.
Yeah, right. That's an intelligent picture. Okay, yeah. All right. Well,
okay.
I think we're all set tonight. I'm tired because I've been sitting in front of this computer for long.
I know. I've been pacing almost the entire time. I don't know what the mileage is.
Well, I know. I probably should get up because it makes you sitting down. That's a good place. Sometimes if you sit down, I haven't been up since we sat down here. But
I take root if I don't get up. Yeah, it's rough. It's rough on crackling the musical of joints and all. So no, walking is a lot better. So for me, anyway.
Yeah.
I appreciate